Hello, my name is Evan Jacobs, and welcome to the Orange County Hardcore Scenester Aftermath Podcast. These interviews are part of an ongoing series chronicling the hardcore punk music scene in Orange County, California, and sometimes elsewhere. They are an addendum to the film Orange County Hardcore Scenester. This is a documentary I made that chronicles the 1990s hardcore punk scene. You can stream Orange County Hardcore Scenester on Vimeo. For $2 a month, you can watch every Anadenia film by subscribing to Anadenia Films Unlimited on Vimeo. Links for all this stuff are in each episode description. To support this podcast, please like, rate, and review it. Also, please subscribe to Anadenia Films TV on YouTube, where you can view all of these podcasts in their original video form. When you first get the mic, right, and you're like gonna practice, you're gonna take the stage, who was in your head? Like, was there anyone that you wanted to be like, anyone that you wanted to emulate, or was it kind of like you always just wanted to be your own guy? Like, was there ever anyone when you were on stage singing that you're like, okay, I'm gonna be like this guy?
Well, I mean, a lot of guys are going to say this. A lot of people have said this. It's Henry Rollins. At that point, you know, Henry was my guy. I thought he was incredible on stage. There's no way I'm going to be my guy. I don't know who that is at that point. I wanted to pull off the crazy persona. I wanted to be crazy on stage. I just wanted to go nuts on stage and hopefully convey energy, enough energy to make the crowd get energetic and do something as well. If I had to bleed, so be it, whatever. You know, I never thought I reached that peak to where I was really driving the crowd. And I don't think it ever really happened, maybe a few shows, but that's where I wanted to be. I mean, Henry was the guy.
Of all the music that you've created in all the various bands, What is one record that if you were like, hey, this, you know, everything else in the world is getting destroyed, but this is something that we're going to save, which record would it be for you?
Oh, God. For the stuff we did, right? Or stuff I did?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm torn. You know, I mean, I thought Step Back and Listen sucked. And recording of it, but at the same time, a lot of people loved it because it was pretty simple, you know, and that it seems like simple is better than complex when it comes to music, in my experience. Every recording I did in different bands, they all had a different feeling. There was a different setting, different experience, different memories. Getting asked to sing on a Final Conflict record was kind of the pinnacle for me because our whole band loved those guys. They were like our buddy band, but they were guys we really looked up to. That being said, the 7-inch we did in 96 or 97, that was done in a garage in Belmont Heights down in Long Beach. And Rusty Cavender did that recording on a pretty simple system, and we got more energy and more sound out of that than I had ever experienced on any record. And that record got, since it was so limited, it really didn't get out there. It was a kind of a short press, you know, short print run. But I think out of all of them combined, everything I ever did, that was probably my favorite just for the experience of it. How we did it, what came of it. We wrote one of the songs, and it actually didn't get on the 7-inch. It got on a comp, and we wrote it on the spot. I told Steve I got this idea, and this is kind of how the lyrics go, and this is kind of what I'm thinking for music. And he was okay. He played it a few times. And RD happened to be in Rusty's house where they did the engineering part of it, producing part of it. And he said, what are you playing? And Steve said, well, Tim and I are working on something new here. And he goes, I thought we were done. So he goes, but that sounds pretty cool. I'll be out there in a second. So Artie comes out, sits on the drum, starts playing to what Steve's playing. Our bass player at the time was Andy Green. You remember Andy Green from Green Records and 36 Short Martinez. He comes out. He's packed up. He goes, okay, I guess I'm going to unpack. And so he unpacks, and we play the song. It ends up being a 26-second blast, you know, and it's the recording. It's amazing because the recording came out totally different than the 7-inch songs. It came out stronger and louder and bigger for some reason, whatever. And just there was a whole lot of things in that recording that's the reason why I think with the 7-inch was special to me.
And this is the Serial Killers one, right? Or, right, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that one, there's so much going for that 7-inch, and I think so much of why it sounds, that urgency, why that got captured, it just seemed like you guys really were in, like, a stripped-down environment. Would you agree?
Yeah, we kind of stepped out of our comfort zone for sure on that one. It was something it was far removed from anything we'd done before. But then again, it was, you know, 9 years later. So we had some of those songs written for a long time. And it was during a period where we were just jamming and goofing around and wrote a few songs and goofed around in Steve's living room. And didn't really, you know, we weren't playing live or anything. I think some of those songs were going to be prison songs, and we just never used them.
I remember I was at For the Record, and I saw the prison sticker, and it said something to the effect of discipline plus, yeah, I mean, you know, like what, like discipline plus pain equals education or something?
Yeah, that was, I watched your interview with E. That was awesome because that recording was fun too. And E is a character, man. He really is. When you get him to loosen up, he is a character. And that was fun because it was a whole, you know, the music scene in Southern California, there's so much, everybody's tight. Everybody knows each other. It's one big family because when we did that, prison recording at For the Record, Paul Miner was an apprentice there.
Yep.
And fast forward 20 something years and we got Paul Miner recording the MFB stuff. And it was great. It's just wild how tight the community is in Southern California.
He's doing that. He's doing Fear. He's doing Lisa Loeb. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. He really, he's a genius. But Paul is a genius as well.
Yep.
I mean, he does some just miraculous stuff in the studio.
So, switching gears a little bit, how did you get into bikes? Like, had you always been into bikes? And that was something that kind of grew as you got older? Or did you get into bikes later in life? How did that happen, like motorcycles?
I started riding motorcycles at 3 years old. I started racing motorcycles at 4. So I've been around motorcycles and off-road racing my entire life. And so when I got sick, I don't know if you know or not, but I had a kidney transplant in 2008. I've had kidney problems my whole life. They told me eventually they're going to fail. You know, you're going to need a transplant. Well, I was on dialysis for about 3.5 years.
Oh, wow.
I got a transplant from one of my buddies and a live donor, which is, you know, what you can hope for, you know, the best you can hope for. And so, my personal nephrologist was telling me, we don't want you on bikes or off-road cars or anything anymore, too dangerous. And so I still have to check in with UCLA once a year and talk to them about the transplant. And the first year back to them, I talked to my transplant surgeon, and he said, what are you talking about? He goes, you can do anything you want to do. He goes, matter of fact, he goes, I want to go for a ride in your off-road car. So I've been around bikes my whole life. The first 3 years after my transplant, I had a lot of different things going on with my health. It took a while to get all squared away with all that, and I finally did. So I got back on a bike, and I got away from the desert dirt stuff for a while because I got pneumonia a couple times. The dust wasn't doing much for me. It was hurting me. And so I got away from the off-road racing, and my brother talked me into buying a Harley and started riding Harleys. And I've had a couple of wrecks. About 11 years ago, I broke my back in a crash, going to band practice. And then 2.5 years ago, my pops died. I was off work for a few weeks with him at the hospital, and I'd gone home that night. Work called and said, "Hey, we know you're going through stuff. But if you want some overtime, you come on out tonight and help us tie up a ship." I work in the harbor, and so I said, "Sure, that'll take my mind off stuff. That'll be good for me." And so I jumped on the bike. The wife told me, "Don't do it." I said, "I need this." And sure enough, woman's intuition, she knew. And just, my dad had died 2 days before. And I'm right along and just decided I'm going to run this red light. I didn't see it. My head was somewhere else. Ran a red light, hit a car. I was doing 55. So, trauma room visit and lots of broken bones and I'm back on the bike now. I was off the bike for about a year, but I'm back on now.